This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But the hijinks don't stop. And the poop jokes. Then I said, who's discount David Schwimmer? Then he said, and the score is great. Then I said, the main bad guy? And he said, the brother and the twin combo.
Hello. This is the worst idea of all time. This is an emergency season of a podcast that sees two Kiwi comedians watch and review the same movie over and over again. For lols. Not for reals, just for laughs. We spent a whole year watching Grown Ups 2, which is an Adam Sandler movie, which is in the single digits on Rotten Tomatoes. Then we spent 12 months watching and reviewing on a weekly basis Sex and the City 2, a much derided film. Then we took a short detour to a non-sequel film. We watched We Are Your Friends, which was an attempt at a Zac Efron art house film, and it was beloved by none. It performed historically badly in the box office. We then watched Sex and the City 1, going back to the origins of our worst season, sort of the precursor, the seeds of what made it so bad. And that movie was also very bad and very long. We watched that for a year. Now, we're in the middle of a global pandemic, locked in our houses, and we decided to watch a film that in some ways mirrored that effect, which is Home Alone 3. A very insular movie about being in a house.
Mm.
I'm Tim Batt. This is Guy Montgomery. Hello, Guy.
Hello, Tim. What a wonderful preamble and summation of our work and our thesis so far.
Hey, what would you say if I told you that what I just described covered 6 years?
Of my life?
Yeah. Or of all of our lives.
It's not, I mean, we're not helping.
15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Yeah, it's six.
14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. This is the seventh.
Oh.
So at 7 years old, let me tell you what your child can do at 7 years old.
What developmental stage they're at.
I'm just looking it up.
Okay. Well, they're talking, obviously. They've got object permanence. Hopefully they can walk.
Yeah. Motor development. Their hand-eye coordination is well-developed. They've got good balance. They can execute simple gymnastics moves, such as somersaults. They use a vocabulary of several thousand words. Demonstrate a longer attention span. Tim, I would say this movie has quite actively upset my attention span. This movie, this project, this enterprise...
How do you think our gymnastics and vocab skills are?
I think our vocabulary is being rewarded for our labor. I think it's had a detrimental effect on my gymnastic skills. If I compile all the hours spent and imagine that I was learning how to do some sort of basic gymnastics routine, that's something that's been taken away from me and that I will probably never get around to now. And I used to love gymnastics. After I saw Rush Hour 2, I taught myself how to jump up off the ground on my back. I taught myself how to do a running forward flip. I taught myself how to do a front handspring, a round off. I couldn't put them all into one swift run of movement, but I taught myself those independently. They were all a bit gammy. I didn't have an instructor.
Yeah. At what age... Could you do a sprinting front flip? That's incredible.
Until about 20.
Wow.
Maybe even longer.
Did you have to pick up a lot of speed before you could do it?
I think mentally I did, but you don't actually have to. It's more about timing and your speed of rotation. But you're a little gymnastics-y as well, aren't you?
I don't think I am anymore, which is disappointing.
I just remember we went to a whiskey bar in downtown Los Angeles, and we were coming in pretty hot, and it was a pretty popular bar full of American people, and you cleared a space on the dance floor and did like a... what was almost a backflip?
No, it was probably a front. What are they called? A handspring.
Anyway, you slice it. I was on the level enough with you to think this looked really cool. But with hindsight, what probably happened was two really drunk New Zealand guys came in and stressed everyone out by almost injuring themselves in a bar.
No. Well, first of all, I did injure myself quite significantly, if you remember. I popped my knee out on that particular dance floor, which really hindered the rest of the winter trip. I remember dragging my ass around Washington, D.C. with a gammy knee in the cold and determined to walk the national, what is it called?
Monument Mile?
The parade? There's a word for it. I've forgotten what it is. Every American will know what it is, but that's fine.
Lucky them. How do we get by without that information? God only knows. Tim, at 7 years old, we should use serious logical thinking, be thoughtful and reflective. We should be able to understand reasoning and make the right decisions. We should be able to tell time, know the days, months, and seasons, describe points of similarity between two objects.
We had it and we've lost it. We definitely don't have sound judgment, and I don't think our sense of time is improving. I think it's getting worse.
We should be able to solve more complex problems.
No, that's not happening either.
We should desire to be perfect and be quite self-critical.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
We should worry more. Have low self-confidence. Tend to complain with strong emotional reactions. This is in our wheelhouse. Understand the difference between right and wrong. That one less so. Take direction well. Needs punishment only really. We take punishment twice or thrice weekly.
Do we need it? Do you feel like we need that punishment?
No. I think not. I had a pretty allergic reaction to Home Alone 3 on this, our 8th screening. Mm-hmm. Just your classic.
Tell me about it, stud.
Oh, thanks, man. I had the laptop away from me so that I couldn't touch it and distract myself. I had my phone away from me. I was like, I'm going bareback. I'm going old school. I'm fucking mainlining this thing. And my brain, I couldn't receive what was happening on screen. Instead, I just like thought of other things. I think we're in a time of transition here in New Zealand, and so there was quite a lot. There was quite fertile thinking ground to sow, but I could not get it into me. There are a few moments that stood out. I mean, you know, sure, there are always going to be a few moments that stand out, but this was the equivalent of having the TV on in the background while also having nothing else to do.
That is painful, what you've just described. I think I'm probably at that stage as well. I had to split the viewing in half, which was a bit naughty, but I watched half of it yesterday and the second half this morning.
How the great John Hughes intended. I will say this. This is our last episode where we are not riding together.
Is that a fact?
It's a fact. We are legally bound, obligated, and allowed to sit next to one another, put the Home Alone 3 DVD in the DVD machine, and fucking...
Yeah, that's the process we've been adhering to, isn't it?
Settle up and watch this and discuss this next to each other. This is our last remote record. And I think it couldn't come at a better time. It's what the movie needs, is companionship. Alex Pruitt is home alone. He has the company of Doris, a mouse, and a very intelligent parrot. He is mistrusted by everyone in his inner circle, and that feeling of isolation is something with which I can identify, as I have also been watching this movie while home alone. Tim, what about Home Together? What about fucking Home Together 3? Or in our case, Home Alone, Home Together 9-3.
Did you see that a bunch of Australian comedians have made a show called Home Alone Together? It's just come out.
I did.
I was like, hey, what the fuck? And they've used the Home Alone logo and everything.
Oh, really?
It looks quite funny, though. Yeah. Well, I think so. They're definitely referencing it.
I watched a good trailer for it where someone was baking a loaf of bread and then it kept getting passed from house to house and everyone had a very different practical application for the loaf of bread. For some people, it was a phone. For others, it was a toilet roll. And I thought, this is the right tone. I'm interested to see where this show goes.
There's very good people involved.
What I wasn't interested to see...
Home Alone 3?
The journey of young Alex Pruitt. But I will say this.
Jernigan. Yeah.
Before I badmouth the good people of Home Alone 3, the original score transition between Alex's walk home after shoveling snow for Mrs. Hess and the crooks arriving in their car on his street is sensational. While Alex walks home, he hasn't been paid by Mrs. Hess. She's given him a car so that he can't say to the neighborhood she ripped him off. And there's this sort of pensive, almost Forrest Gump-esque motif. You know that... Dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. Oh, wow. Yeah, I haven't thought about that in ages.
It's similar to that. And he's walking up, and it's sort of this reflective, instrumental piano-style riff that puts us in the mind of young Alex Pruitt. I think his life's pretty good. I don't know why we're meant to feel melancholy, but to some extent we do. That is the tone of the music. And then as he clears the street and gets onto the other side of the sidewalk, it suddenly becomes much more sinister and sort of, it's like it's the sound of crooks surveying a neighborhood. And it's a really seamless transition. It's one piece of music. It's beautifully executed. And then they pan back to Alex arriving home. And this is a real touch of class. They layer the two instrumental riffs over one another. And finally, in that moment, Home Alone 3 becomes the fully realized movie that it is. It's a blend of these sort of the serious, you know,
Tomfoolery,
international enterprise, and a young boy getting up to all sorts of undeniably fatal and deadly hijinks.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually look up who composed that, but fucking shout out to them.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because I was talking to our friend, New Zealand comedian David Corios yesterday, and he was just sort of checking in. I can't remember what triggered the convo, and he was like, what are you up to? And I said, I'm just about to tuck into a bit of Home Alone 3. And he said, is it bad to tell you that's my favorite Home Alone? And then I said... dude, this movie sucks. And then he said, that's the first one I watched. Discount David Schwimmer. Also, how they really upped the ante with proper Die Hard style supervillains. But the hijinks don't stop. And the poop jokes. Then I said, who's Discount David Schwimmer? Then he said, and the score is great. Then I said, the main bad guy? And he said, the brother and the twin combo. Then I said, there's no twins. Then he said, aren't there? Or are they related? Or do they both just have dark short hair and are white? And then he attached a screenshot of Burton Jernigan.
And Earl Unger.
And then another screenshot of David Schwimmer. And I said, oh, Burton Jernigan. Yeah, good call. He's got the most piercing eyes. And then David said, what else has he been in? And then I said, Twin Peaks. And that's about it. And he said, oh. And then attached a recent photo of Lenny Don Volin, I think that is, who plays Burton Jernigan, and said, damn, he's a silver fox now. And then I said, yeah, dog, he's a total honey. And that is our communique in totality. I think we should get David on.
That sounds like a segment called David Correspondence, where he dispatches his pearls of wisdom from a childhood gone by. I really like his notes. I also like the way he remembers movies. When I hear people talking about like books they've read or TV shows they've watched or movies they've seen, and the vivid memories they have of, I guess I have it with certain films, but it makes me feel like I'm consuming things incorrectly.
You undeniably are.
I don't mean in this podcast specifically. I mean in my wider life.
I see.
Like I don't remember the details like that. I mean, I guess his was a little hazy, but he remembers the score. He remembers, like, there was a brilliant...
He thought there were twins in this film.
I could understand why you'd think that. He was a kid when he watched it. And once you get that idea in your head, you know, that's just how it is as you grow up.
Yeah.
Bert and Jernigan and Erlanger could be brothers. Mismatched brothers.
Yeah. Can I just say for this watch as well that... Like every watch, I come to love Earl Unger more and more.
Yeah.
I think that he plays this movie so perfectly. It's like a David Stern level of self-awareness where he knows exactly the level of bad guy to facilitate, you know, buy-in for the movie, but just oh so silly and taking every opportunity to be as funny as possible. He is fucking dynamite.
He is
so
really good.
Hilarious to me now.
I think one thing I don't quite know about on David's note is there aren't that many poo jokes, are there? I think there are more. There are more penis jokes. Yeah,
I think that's what he's sort of filed in his head with Alex has slammed the toilet seat on his thing again.
I think
he's kind of put it into the bathroom humor.
And there's also, Mr. Beaupre gets his Ghoulies absolutely thwacked by a mechanical boxing glove out of the what are we called? The cupboard? What's a cupboard where you keep your jackets called?
I don't know. What is that called? It's not a wardrobe.
And
a coat space,
yeah, that's what it's called. And also and Alex does some fantastic eye acting there where he goes cross-eyed and sort of communicates not empathy, just an understanding that when you get whacked in the ghoulies, it really hurts. And then later on, Burton Jernigan gets absolutely pole-axed in the testes by Alice Ribbons with a hockey stick. And he gives a very funny read on it. He says, "You smacked my winky."
Yeah, but before that sustained note that he sings. I'm going to say sings because it is like a musical note when he gets hit in the nuts. It's impressive.
Yeah.
He belts it out. I reckon he's got a bit of musical chops.
Wouldn't be surprised. I mean, do you think that these guys were excited to be in Home Alone 3? What was the press? What was the buzz? What was the feeling on set? Did they think...
Before I forget, because you brought it up, that moment where Alex does the kind of like, he's looking around the corner and sees Mr. Beaupre get socked. That bit where he whips his head back out of the frame happens so quickly. Like, it's a beautiful kind of comedy moment that the camera's actually through. It's totally his action where he pops into frame, does a little expression, and then jumps himself out. It happens so quick that I've been watching it for the last three watches trying to figure out if someone had a hand on his collar to yank him back.
Because
I don't think you could achieve that speed without
I wonder whether or not he it could be a thing because it's just him in the frame. There's no other moving part. And so you just shoot it in regular speed and then you accelerate it in the edit.
True. Yeah, that could work.
There are a few cartoonish moments like that. One that really jumped out to me the first time this movie, I guess, I mean, it's always cartoonish, but like when they're escaping the first house after Alex has called the cops and the cops are coming around and that, you know, they've been alerted early enough that they can escape and Mr. Beaupre doesn't have to hide in the roof. The car's driving past. Mr. Beaupre walks out very casually and the car's going pretty quickly. And Mr. Beaupre, it's like a glitch or something.
Yeah.
It's like, because to that point, everything had been done in quite a realistic style. And then the car drives past, you see him in front
of
the
car.
It's a van.
Big
and
minivan.
Then all of a sudden he's in the van. I think that's inaccurate. And if it's not, I would love to see the footage inside of the van because that would be a very clumsy landing.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is Hollywood magic, guy. This is the magic of the movies. This is what in the 90s, do you remember this turn of phrase? A camera trick We don't say that anymore because everything's generated by computers. But back then, you know, you were trying to discern what or what wasn't a camera trick in the film.
Yeah.
That was definitely a camera trick, I think.
Of course.
A marvel of editing.
Huge shout out to our countryman, Peter Jackson, for creating one of the great camera tricks, Force Perspective.
He was the original camera trickster.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Favorite. Tim, I'd like to draw some sort of parallel between this film and Sex and the City 2 in comparing Charlie, the unseen boss of Harland Williams, Karen, and Tom, Miranda's hardline, sexist pig of a man boss. I thought that Charlie brought it this week. I thought his performance was on the money. The idea of the actor delivering these lines was fantastic. The audio mix, it's the perfect volume. It reads exactly like the other half of a phone conversation that you can overhear inside of the house because the volume on the phone is slightly too loud. The lines he's got are as follows. Billing just called. He's on his way in to review his portfolio. Leaving Friday. You know we can't cancel. This is all he had to act. This is like, he's got no one to go against. Harland's not coming in to read against this guy. Mary Lou's not who he expects to see. Now, you're the point person on this. Look, you gave me your word you could handle this. Well, it's not my fault you can't find a babysitter. Fine. Karen, and then she fucking gives him what for. But I don't necessarily like the guy, and I understand he's a heel. You know, he's an important prop in this movie's effort to establish itself as one of the foremost feminist texts of the late 90s.
No cosign. I was with you and you lost me, but continue.
But I think it's a really strong performance. I haven't seen who the actor is, but I think the guy really brings it. To be just a voice and have such a clearly defined character and responsibility in the film. And, I mean, there's credit's got to be spread evenly here. We've got to give credit to the screenwriter. We've got to give credit to the sound engineer. We've got to give credit to the actor themselves. That's three bits of credit. So
it wouldn't shock me to hear that it was the sound engineer on the day.
Doing the line delivery.
I reckon that happens all the time. Someone calls in sick. They forgot to hire someone, whatever, and the guy's like, oh, fuck, I'll do it.
Absolutely not. This is a trained professional. This guy fucking brings it day in, day out. I don't like him. I don't like Charlie. I think he's a bad boss. I think he's probably a bad guy. I think he's definitely got something going on with Mary Lou.
Yeah, definitely. There is some chemistry there. But I think that Charlie is nothing more than a cog in an evil machine. He's as much a victim of the capitalist system that they're a part of as anyone.
No.
He's got underlings, sure, but he's got overlings as well, putting pressure down on him. He's being forced to be a bad man. This is the problem with the system. It makes bad people of us all.
No, Charlie needs to stick his neck out, all right? Charlie has got multiple employees at his disposal who can handle the billing account. He knows full well that Karen is at home with a sick kid. You can't put that sort of pressure on your employees. What's that going to do for group morale?
The client is coming in for a meeting. He expects Karen. He has been dealing with Karen. This is a lot of money on the line, guy.
You're telling me that this client has no understanding of basic empathy, that sometimes your kids get sick and you have to stay at home? Charlie's asking you to find a babysitter on a work day. Kids are at school. Other people are working.
which we are led to believe he is, he probably doesn't have any empathy. He's probably a psychopath.
Well,
it could be Bernie Madoff. They could be dealing literally with Bernie Madoff's account. You don't fuck around with Bernie Madoff.
I think,
and he doesn't care if you got a sick kid at home.
You do. You do fuck around with Bernie Madoff.
No way, man. Too much money at stake. You fuck around with Bernie Madoff will fuck around with you.
It's not real money, Tim. Also, the year is 1997. Is Enron going great guns?
In what respect?
Everyone's like, Enron's good, right?
Oh, Enron. Enron is going great guns. 97? Mwah. We're contemplating opening up into the broadband market. We're thinking of video on demand delivery to the United States.
What?
You know,
what
do they call it? The top 40.
Can you tell me? And what's the elevator pitch for Enron? Why should I put my money there?
Enron started as an energy company, but now is a dreams factory. We dream, we come up with ideas, we revolutionize industries. They basically, like, they managed to turn the energy market into a stock market. So they were trading states' energy supplies around with, like, day traders. And it made the whole thing incredibly risky. A lot of people died in rolling blackouts because they kept whipping the power off in California to generate higher prices. And then it turns out they didn't have any good fundamental product in the business. So when a reporter started sniffing around as to why they were the, like, largest company in America by market capitalization, the whole thing collapsed within about, I think from memory, 3 weeks of the article coming
out.
And the article was like a tiny, like, page 7.
That is... Yeah, really good. That is an incredible forebear for Theranos, which essentially provided the same thing, only instead of being an energy startup, it was a...
Enron took down so many more people. And what was really sad is Enron had been going around buying up all of these little energy companies around the state. So these companies that had existed for generations, for decades and decades...
And provided genuine value. And,
yeah, they were like intergenerational... servicemen who were like, my dad was a linesman for this company and his dad was a linesman and I am a linesman for this
the county
company. And then Enron bought them and then fucking collapsed and they all lost their retirements, their 401ks. Terrible stuff.
I had to see that. Do you know the other thing that's taking place in the background of this movie that has not gotten a mention or a look?
What?
It's 1997, Tim. It's Christmas. It's just after Christmas, 97, 98. I'll tell you what's fucking happening. Michael Jordan's purported final season with the Chicago Bulls as he attempts to repeat a three-peat for the first time in NBA history.
We're in Illinois. This should be front and fucking center.
100%. It's unbelievable to me that we'd spend this time in Chicago when literally the center of the popular culture universe exists around the world of the film. And we're supposed to believe that all fucking Alex Pruitt wants to do is kill four thieves?
In 1997, I was wearing Bulls merch in Christchurch, New Zealand.
Fucking hell. Unfreaking believable.
They were good hats, man. It's a powerful logo for a kid. That angry bull, the color red. Nice.
It's
aggressive.
It's all good stuff. But I'll tell you what is happening in the background of this film. Again, we don't see it, but we know about it. Some agents are sharp, some agents are blunt, but you've never seen such a useless cunt as Stucky. It's stuck with Stucky.
What's happening in today's Stuck with Stucky, Guy Montgomery?
Well, Stucky comes into work after a pretty rough day at the office, if you'll recall, involving a coffee stain and a full-scale brawl amongst the amnesia agents. Of course, his boss came in and said, "Stucky!" Anyway, Stucky sheepishly trots his way into his office and he's fearful that he's going to get an absolute fucking telling off at the hands of his boss. His boss calls him into the office. As soon as he arrives, Stucky braces himself, expecting the worst. He walks in. The boss looks Stucky square in the eyes and he says, "What the hell are you doing in my office?" And Stucky says, "What? Sorry? No, I've come in. You told me to come in here." And the boss says, "Why would I tell you to come in here when I've never met you before in my life?" Uh-oh!
Whoa!
The boss has amnesia as well now!
Oh my god, this is terrifying. It's alluding to some sort of contagious form of amnesia in the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
So the boss says to him, "You get out of here." And Stucky leaves, confused. He's rubbing his brow. He's thinking, "Oh boy, I'm really up against it today." As he leaves, the boss looks down at his notepad. The top line of his notepad reads, "Talk to Stucky." The boss looks up and he bellows, "Stucky!
Stucky!"
Stucky turns on a dime and returns. The boss says, "What are you doing in here? I just dismissed you. Send in Stucky." Stucky says, "I am Stucky." And the boss says, "I think I know Stucky when I see him." Meanwhile, on the ground floor of the high-rise office building at the home of the FBI, the amnesia agents are all piling into one lift. The problem? None of them have any idea what floor they're meant to go to. So they push every single button in the elevator and all walk off to a day's work at various different companies. One person walks into a chartered accountancy firm. Another person works into a sports agency. Another one walks onto the floor where Enron are operating out of.
Yes.
Chaos ensues. Meanwhile, Stucky is now walking back into his boss's office with a very obvious fake mustache on. The boss says, "Ah, Stucky, just the man I wanted to see. I've called you in here to say," and the boss looks down at his notes, "you're doing a terrible job." Stucky, trying to take advantage of his boss's newfound medical condition, says, "What are you talking about? Just before you said I got a promotion." And the boss says, "Okay. Now get out of here!" Stucky's finally free from his boss and walks into the bullpen where the amnesia agents traditionally wait for their briefing. Only no one is there. Dun, dun, dun! Stuck with
Stucky.
How
would you feel about us producing some short episodes of Stuck with Stucky? Because this is getting me juiced up.
I'd be pretty into it, man. I gotta tell you, it's a fun place to put a little bit of energy. I didn't get to flesh that one out as much as I would have liked, but I think we're on the right track here. I think this is an exciting project. This is a really good intellectual property. We might need to change the character name to avoid any legal ramifications from John Hughes himself, but I think we're on to something.
John Hughes is dead, motherfucker. We can take Stuck with Stucky to the moon. We can make Stuck with Stucky merch.
To the window, to the wall, to my balls are stuck on the wall with Stucky. I love it, man.
Let me tell you some stuff. I've brought up my notes. The dad is Kevin Kilner. The hot dad.
I love that guy. He does not have the career that you'd think he deserves, eh?
Exactly. But can I ask you this? Because the least surprising thing I think I've ever heard in my damn life. Based on that guy's face, what sport do you think he excelled at in college?
Lacrosse?
Yes, dude. Yeah.
Fuck.
He has the most, in fact, I'll tell you, he went to Delaney High School and Johns Hopkins University, in Baltimore. And at Johns Hopkins, he was a member of the national champion lacrosse team.
Why?
And I don't.
Why do people play that one? Americans are so crazy. It's like there were so many great sports in the world, and they said, "Nah, we got this," and just came up with sports so shit that literally no one else wants to play them with them. And they go, "That's okay. If we win within our own community, we're the fucking best."
He said, from New Zealand, a country that absolutely prides itself on being the best at rugby, a game which four countries play?
Absolutely not. Like, so many countries play rugby. The World Cup that happens every 4 years, that's an actual function of the professional sport. There's no World Cup for American football. There's no World Cup
true.
For lacrosse. Like,
true.
We play against other countries.
Either.
We're a sociable bunch. We say, "Hey, Australia, you play the same sport as us. It might be fun to fucking mix and mingle."
Um, What else did I write? I wrote down that I'm so sick of hearing the dumbass routine about I left my bread in San Francisco. I left my heart in San Francisco. No one fucking cares.
How big is this chain? Yeah. Like, for Beaupré to be going through someone's house and for them also to have an old Parisian or Parisian bag in which they keep their winter gloves. Also, why is their winter glove bag full of gloves when it's already winter? Get them out of storage. Get them on your hands. You give yourself a chill otherwise.
Parisian Incorporated was an American chain of department stores founded and headquartered in Birmingham, Alabama, competing mainly in the established southeastern U.S. market through the 80s against Nordstrom, Neiman Marcus, and Gus Meyer. Parisian underwent a series of restructurings and mergers during its 130-year history and was taken over by Profits, spelt with two F's, Incorporated. That's a fucking good name for a corporation, in 1996. So it looks like they are defunct as of 2013, no longer exists. But this is definitely the right one because it's got that logo on it.
That sucks. Why are they in San Francisco at a Parisian store when that is a store that's mainly focused on the southeast? And also, the airport they are in is so obviously the same airport. When they're leaving and returning, it's both the same airport. I'm sure it's Chicago's airport.
It's O'Hare, for sure. Yeah,
twice.
They probably got a deal. Yeah. Why would you pay for two? It'd be so expensive to shoot in an airport, I reckon. You have to shut things
down. What
was
the budget of this movie?
Didn't we figure this out? Like 30 mil, I think. Home Alone 3 budget. It is 32 mil US.
Maybach 79.
We even did a breakdown. We did a breakdown like one episode ago. I only know this because I've been editing the episodes. You know what's a fucking crazy moment? I think I've brought it up briefly, but man, I just got to highlight it. You know when Alex spray paints Mr. Beaupré and then I think it's at that moment. Then he leans against the door and he goes, "What a loser." And then a fucking bandsaw almost kills him.
Yeah.
That comes through the door. Fuck, that's terrifying. Most of this movie is spoofs and goofs, except there is a running electrical saw that goes straight through the door, mere inches away from an 8-year-old boy.
If we're going to be talking about things that should scare Alex, guns. This kid's a sociopath. He's got no value on his own life. Like, he is putting himself on the front line and at incredibly high risk. He's totally uncowed by the fact that they've got... I guess, do you know why he's not afraid of the guns?
Why?
He's got what they need, and they need him alive. They need him alive.
Oh, I see.
He knows...
I thought you were about to bust into a bit of Bismarcky.
Oh, no. But, I mean, that would be a great thing to underscore the point.
Hey, bad guys, you...
No, hey, bad guys, I got what you need. Well. It's a missile chip that could help you dominate the region.
You know how you mentioned before that this movie's version of Sex and the City 2's Tom, who does the telephone acting, does a stupendous job. My shining light for this episode, I am thrilled to tell you, fits into this pantheon of off-camera, on-mic voice acting. It is a line delivered with such character and confidence and tonality that it just juts out against the rest of the movie and it forces you to pay attention with pricked ears. The line is, plus special carrot feeding tips, coming up next on Pets on Parade.
Oh, nice. I've heard that. I've not zeroed in on it, but I've heard it and it's a great shining light.
You've got to zero in on it. It's so good.
Well, you know what?
It's what Mrs. Hess is watching just before Alex fucks around changing
and puts on Jamie Foxx. My shining light was someone who represented myself in the film. It's not every day that I get to see someone who I identify so closely with. It's the TSA agent who could not be paying less attention. It's like they go to specifically a cutaway of the agent who's meant to be observing whatever's going through the X-ray machine. And this guy has a fucking 1,000-yard stare. He's got a glazed over look in his eyes. This guy has definitely burned one down for Jar, rolled into his job, and does not give one flying hoot about the safety of these passengers. And honestly, why would you? You're not going to save anyone.
I swear to you, I'm not saying this to be nitpicky. I'm saying it out of a point of interest. Do you know that that's not a TSA official? Because we've normalized it so much, but the TSA didn't even exist in 1997.
Well, then he's just some fucking guy in a navy blue sports jacket. And he's my guy. And we can point this stuff out to each other on the next episode of our emergency season, because we're going to be riding side saddle.
Hell yeah. That's going to be fun. Crack open the beers.
Oh, dude.
We should watch at a bar or something. A swimming pool? I don't know. Let's get creative.
A public space. That'll do it for this episode of our emergency season. I hope you're enjoying it. I hope it's keeping you company during this unprecedented time. Tim?
Oof. Yes?
I've searched for precedent.
Yep.
Do you think I found it?
I don't think you did.
The bubonic plague. The fastest way to a trillionaire's bank account is by murder most foul.
Okay.
We murder. Wait, we accelerate, and then we strike.
Okay. I like that. Yeah, let's kill Jeff Bezos.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.